The Guardian.
Nova is America's most watched science series. You'll find it every night at 7:50 on PBS, Sky Channel 166, Virgin Media 243. PBS, where television matters.
Welcome back to Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons. This week, I report from the 2011 British Independent Film Nominations Ceremony in what's proving to be a vintage year for British cinema. I talk to Benedict Cumberbatch and Sally Hawkins, just some of the nominees. Also, I'll be meeting British director Andrew Haigh to find out more about his sophisticated lo-fi romance, Weekend. Sam Brooks joins me later to review some of the week's other big releases, including a death-defying Justin Timberlake in Time, Romola Garry and Eddie Marson in Junkheart, and Gerard Butler is caught in a moral maze in Machine Gun Preacher. Yes, it's a podcast with the safety latch off. It's Film Weekly.
I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to walk down the street in a trance.
One message we keep getting this year from gathering evidence at festivals from Sundance to Venice and London is that British cinema is in vibrant health. Even the British independent sector has so far weathered financial and political storms whilst managing to create distinctive and challenging cinema. This week, the British Independent Film Awards announced their nominations, and the shortlist is a testament to the depth of talent, new and old, in the British film industry. Now, as a long-standing supporter of this particular subset of world cinema, a former juror, in fact, I went down to the BIFFA nominations announcement reception in London earlier this week to discover just some of the nominees, including Sally Hawkins for her role in Richard Ayoade's Submarine, and Benedict Cumberbatch for his part in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. But first, I spoke to one of this year's judges, filmmaker Josh Opinionese, to reveal the tough task it will be to pick this year's winners from the nominees.
There was a frisson that went round the room at the mention of certain films, and I realised, this is how this game works, yeah? So, like, you know, a name is mentioned, I won't say which one, or you know, a film, and there are supporters, and people say, a little wave of applause goes by, and I think, I'm meant to vote for that film, aren't I? No, I'm not going to fucking do it. I'm going to be a contrary fucker, and I'm going to vote for the other film. I don't know.
You are a contrary so-and-so, which indeed. I like, I've always liked. Yes. Have you peeked behind the curtain? Because you've been nominated twice at the BIFFAs. I remember Song of Songs was nominated.
Song of Songs, yes, that's right. The Infidel, I think, didn't maybe edit that out.
No, it might have been. I don't know. It was certainly discussed.
It wasn't, but yes, it was discussed. That's right. Song of Songs was in there. Had a short that was in there. It's been a great supporter of my work. I mean, what can I say? You've got to love it. As an independent filmmaker, it is the only awards ceremony that has any sort of genuine independence.
The best supporting actresses for Albatross, Felicity Jones, for Coriolanus, Vanessa Redgrave, for Shame, Kerry Mulligan, for Submarine, Sally Hawkins, and for Tinker Tailor.
I've got a BIFFA nominee with me, best supporting actress, Sally Hawkins.
Hello.
Congratulations for Submarine as well, which I have to say, it is one of my favourite Sally Hawkins performances.
Really?
I know, it shouldn't be. I mean, you're the lead in many things.
I'm really flattered, thank you. She was quite hard work, actually.
I think the reason is because I'd never seen you do this part before.
She sort of came from somewhere, dark hole, I think. But no,
who were you doing when you did it? Because it was almost you were unrecognizable.
It's kind of a black magic. So
it's just the actor's craft. Not based on your former head teacher.
I forget. Something kicks in, and I have no memory of it.
What was working on the film? Because Richard was the first time director. So.
Yeah, but it was sort of not really. He's been directing for so many years. He's done phenomenal music videos that are just like mini features in themselves and beautiful. His beautiful work. He's very incredibly clever, very, very lovely. And I'm very excited to be, surrounded, to be working on a film with your friends and where you really respect their work and know that you're in really safe hands. It's the best feeling in the world.
It's a funny little world, this BIFFAs, because not only is the man that you have a flirtatious mullet-headed affair with in Paddy Considine in Submarine, I think he's got more nominations than your film. I think he's got six nominations.
Has
You've
he
got
really?
Five.
Yeah. Has he really?
As a director, yeah.
Fantastic. Yes. And that's brilliant. I mean, working with Paddy, it's like a dream come true. It's one of those actors that... he's very special, and there isn't another Paddy.
Your cameo, it's not a cameo, but your,
I suppose what I think is a really strong performance in Submarine is recognised. I'm really pleased. I mean, everyone's recognised Submarine, I think, as well, because your two kids are Yasmin and Craig.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting for that. It's just exciting for such a small, comparatively small film, you know, making such an impact.
Best supporting actors this year for Kill List, Michael Smiley. For Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Tom Hardy. For Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch, congratulations, nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Thank you very much indeed.
Not just you, Tom Hardy as well.
I know, yeah, exactly.
You're going to have another fight?
I think we might, yeah.
I'd like to see that.
I think the only situation I could win a fight with Tom is definitely that of a fictional setup in a film.
He's saw that kickboxing thing he did as well. He'd have you any time.
I think he could eat me alive. Yeah, I've no doubt about it. I'll just have to think my way out of it or something.
The film itself got, well, there's your nomination and his, but there's 7 nominations in all for the film.
Oh, it's terrific. I mean, I'm so proud to be in the film, let alone for it to be as loved and celebrated and sort of recognised as it has been today and through the press we've had. And I hope it translates in America as well, because I think it is a modern classic, and I say that because I'm one of about 30 brilliant people in it. Well, not say I'm one of 30 brilliant people.
Kathy Burke.
Amongst 30 brilliant people. And, you know, I had to pinch myself every day I turned up for work. So you up your game, and then you look at it all, you get very embarrassed about your bits, and then you get used to that after the second or third time of seeing it. You can sit back and realise that you're watching a classic film. I think it's an astonishing film.
I believe that as well. Kathy Burke, she's only in 2 scenes. She's got a nomination as well.
Well, it's her Judi Dench nomination, isn't it? It's her moment. We love her. We want more of her. We want her back. And it's just, it was such a thrill to see her on set and share a sort of drunken party scene with her and snippets, and then to see her big scene with Gary in it. And she just hits it perfectly, as Connie. And I think it needed someone of her weight to bring that off, because, you know, like all of the characters, there are long shadows cast over our parts by people who played them in the past. And Gary likens it to playing Hamlet. You know, there are other Hamlets other than Alec Guinness. So it's fine for him to have given his Hamlet.
Well, no, I love it. No, I mean, one of the things that interests me is that it's got 7 nominations here at the BIFFAs, and including your production designer. Which I think is absolutely
so well deserved. I mean, she was astonishing. I remember going in there when we were rehearsing and I was researching it, just seeing her workroom, and it was amazing. It was unlike, I mean, the use of imagination as well as research, and obvious sort of very well detailed and analysed work that she'd done behind the scenes, and possibly with MI6, possibly with people who might know something about that world, who knows. I'm not at liberty to comment.
What was that? It
was just a huge, huge expanding from that. And I'm thrilled she's been nominated.
I mean, that's part of the question. We're here at the BIFFAs, and it makes you wonder what's independent anymore. I mean, any film that's made in Britain.
Well, I'll tell you what, we did it on a shoestring. It wasn't a well-paid job, and the location work was minimal. We did most of it up in a disused army barracks in northeast London, northwest London. And literally everything from the interior of Smiley's house to the safe house interiors to... Christ, what else? Those were set.
What about your wardrobe? That was kind of dandyish and fancy. I bet your suits were the biggest thing.
Yeah, I think Jacqueline, our brilliant costume designer, she spent a bit of money on Gwilym, because the rest of them had to look like, you know, they smelt of wet wool, basically, and wet dog, and all things autumnal and grey and slightly uncolourful. And so, yeah, I was the one sort of glamour puss in it, so she went to town on me, which I didn't complain about.
They happen to be style. I mean, I don't know. I know poor Peter Gwilym was slightly in the closet, as he had to be at the time. I'm seeing, you know, you've got a lovely kind of rent boy kind of touch of blonde going on there. Did it have a big effect?
Everyone say this is a very gay home haircut, but I'm playing another character who has blonde hair, and it's a short back and side, so it does look like a little bit of a kind of 80s.
I'm thinking Daniel Day-Lewis in My Beautiful Laundrette.
Yeah. Well, no, he is much more streaky. This is almost, you know, this is... I think they got better at dyeing hair since then.
What's it for?
No, it's for A Parade's End. It's a 5-part adaptation that Tom Stoppard's written of Ford Mannix Ford's famous quartet. And it's for a Mammoth series that, well, Mammoth are producing actually for BBC and HBO, with Rebecca Hall playing my wife. And I'm playing Christopher Tejans, who's this fat, blonde Yorkshireman, about a gentlemanly Yorkshireman, a landed aristocracy Yorkshireman. And it spans 10 years of their relationship and the First World War, and it's an extraordinary, extraordinary tale. And we're filming out in Belgium at the moment. I'm going back to shoot stuff in the trenches, and hopefully not get exploded as I very nearly did last week with the pyrotechnic going off in my face.
Sounds frightening, exciting, and moving as well.
Yeah, it's very, very funny. It's very Stoppardian, so there's a rich mixture of stuff to play, and not least the blonde locks, which have come out again in force. But yeah, no, I went from this. I was dark again for Sherlock before this, so. Yeah, it's been a non-stop traffic light show.
I love seeing it taking off for you so brilliantly, Evan. It's a long time I've been watching you. Just finally then, Peter Guillam's nominated, Tom Hardy's nominated, Kathy Burke's nominated, the film is usually nominated. This is only good news for the film. Will we be seeing Peter Guillam again?
I really hope so. I mean, I think if there's any life for this as not a franchise, but there are other books involving these characters, then yeah, I damn well hope so.
Cheers, Ben.
My thanks to Benedict Cumberbatch and Sally Hawkins. Well-deserved nominations, and it really was a buzz in the room while they were being announced. The MOET British Independent Film Awards ceremony takes place here in London on December the 4th. For a full list of nominees and more information, go to their website, biffa.org.uk. Another beacon of independence joins me now, Guardian film critic Zan Brooks. Welcome back, Zan. Missed
Thank you.
You.
Thank yeah. you. Back in situ.
Good. British Independent Film Awards nominees, etc. Does it mean that British cinema is in rude health?
I think we're... Are we coming again, do you think?
I think we are. Mr. Welland will be proud again.
Yeah. I mean, I think, as you were saying, before we went on air, it is the breadth and the range of it that's interesting this year. So you have got the kind of the classy option, like Tinker Tailor, which is, I guess, this year's King's Speech, but infinitely better. And then you have got the kind of exploitation stuff, like Attack the Block, like, you know, Kill List.
Yeah.
So there is something for everyone. We had an article, my colleague Andrew Pulver wrote an article a couple of weeks ago that may well come back to sort of bite him on the arse 6 months down the line, where he was saying this is a great year for British cinema. And perhaps at the moment, right now, it does look that way.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a lot of strength in the squad, so to speak, whether it will go on and actually win the title, because people say, well, King's Speech winning the Oscars, Slumdog winning the Oscars, those sort of tend to go down in the history books, well, that must have been a good year for British cinema. But there is the Biffa nominations, there's a lot to choose from.
It's got bottom this year, hasn't it?
It's certainly got bottom, yes. Talking of which, let's look at the films that we'll be reviewing this week. In Time is the return of Andrew Niccol to the big screen, Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried. Machine Gun Preacher sees Gerard Butler, whatever you want to call him, depends how close you are to him. He's back in Machine Gun Preacher, talking of exploitation. And then a little British film that sort of made it onto the Biffa list as well, Junk Hearts, which stars Eddie Marsden, stars Candice Reed, stars Rom Legare, and a surprise performer as well, of which I'm sure you will talk, Zan. But we will start with In Time. As I said, it stars Justin Timberlake and Mamma Mia's Amanda Seyfried. I wonder how long that will hang around her neck, poor girl, if she's receiving Best Actress Oscars. I don't know. Here's a clip. This is a party at Amanda Seyfried's dad's house. He's a multi-billionaire, or whatever they measure it in. We'll explain later. Mr. Vice. And here's Justin Timberlake, who's a guy from the other side of town, trying to get to know a comely daughter.
Do you always have a hired hand standing right next to you?
No, I usually have two.
It doesn't make it very easy to get to know you.
I think that's the idea.
Your idea?
My father's.
I understand. You all have a lot to lose.
So do you. What do, Will?
I haven't quite figured that out yet.
Yes, why bother? What's the hurry?
Right. Why do today what you can do in a century?
I know one thing we can do. Dance with me.
In Time, it's called, Zan, and that's because time counts.
Time counts. This is a dystopian sci-fi, which, like all good dystopian sci-fis, is just a little shuffle step away from the world that we live in.
Yeah. Lots of rain.
Well, lots of rain, and money has nominally been replaced by hours and minutes.
Yeah.
And I guess that is how it works.
So it's the money, currency of this dystopia.
Yeah, money buys time. You know, the rich live longer, they have more leisure time, the poor die young. That's the world that we live in, but that's sort of extrapolated on.
And the concept is that, in fact, the old, we don't even know they're old, because everyone stops aging at 25.
Absolutely. Justin Timberlake's mum looks about the same age as Justin Timberlake, played by Olivia Wilde here. Justin Timberlake is bequeathed an extra 100 years, so then becomes, because of this, wealthy. And starts disporting himself among the aristocrats. Mm. But then is pursued and takes Amanda Seyfried as his hostage.
And how much time does that take?
It takes a little longer than it should.
Utterly high concept. I mean,
it's very high concept.
So the time poor, in fact, live in the ghetto because they're poor, and then the time rich, strangely, are the ones who live in the kind of posh bit where there's hotels and they have to get through the zones. As with all high concept things, you know, they take ages to explain the concept.
Yes, they do.
Whereas in the film, they're sort of part of the fabric of it, and you're waiting for a plot to develop by the time that this concept is explained. I never got past that in this film. I never quite sort of knitted the two together. Oh, time, that's good, and you know, this
it's
costs 2 days, that costs
idea.
5 minutes. Definitely a neat idea. But what if it had been about money, would it have been any different?
Possibly not. And I think the problem is that he takes this neat idea and then shackles it to a really substandard, basically chase movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of running.
There's a lot of running around and jumping. And time starts crawling a little. And the characters are, you know, they're basically like furniture.
Yeah.
There's nothing to them at all. And Justin Timberlake can be a good actor. Amanda Seyfried, I'm still yet to be entirely convinced
ever.
By
it. No, I mean that one.
But
was,
this
she did
again
with Channing
isn't
Tatum.
Her.
What was that rubbish one about the letters? And no, the one in Italy, letters to Juliet.
Yeah, letters to Juliet.
I mean,
yeah,
God, I want
yeah.
that time back, and I want the time back for the Dear John.
She's
thing
costing
with,
you, isn't she?
I am so poor at the moment. I'm wasting my time.
You're
with
a
her.
Brunette when she started making movies.
So she was a blonde, and now she's a brunette with different hair, trying to show her range.
And so, yeah, this does crawl, and maybe that's the
I was surprised because this is a guy who does. Do sci-fi high concept
movies. He does it very well.
Gattaca,
he did Gattaca. He wrote The Truman Show, which is, you know, one of the better sci-fi films
yeah,
of the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's a concept that actually works. For me, that's it. I find these sci-fi dystopias, well, I suppose they would be, but they're so devoid of humour. I mean, I would have a laugh if the end of the world is coming. There's a lot of end-of-world stuff coming at the moment, like Melancholia. Yeah.
What else?
There was another one.
There was that Contagion, wasn't there?
Contagion, there you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
So we're all doomed, but there's more interesting ways to be doomed than
I think
this.
So. He did do The Lord of War, Andrew Niccol, which I thought was rather good.
Yeah, that was okay.
Especially
that was okay,
sequence.
But he's, you know, he was, 15 years ago, he was the great white hope of Hollywood, and it hasn't quite played out for him. No. If only he could turn back the clock, eh?
He's been working all week on that. He's here all week. Try the veal.
Freshly cooked.
And so we'll take a millennial leap to Machine Gun Preacher, where Gerard Butler plays Sam Childers fresh out of jail, and instead of picking up his life as a heroin addict, he decides to find God, go to Kenya, and then help the Sudanese children over the border from civil war.
The night commuters, they come from deep in the bush. Their parents send them out because it's safer to sleep here than in their own homes.
Why?
Because death comes at night in the villages. These are the lucky ones so far. The ones the rebels haven't found yet.
Hey, come on, get up.
What are you doing?
Let's go, get up. They ain't sleeping out here. Tell them they're coming inside. Come on, y'all get up.
Sam.
Let's go.
Sam, there are too many. You can't help them all.
Well, there you are. This is based on a true life story of Sam Childers, who seems to get really annoyed. He gets out of jail and his wife's given up her stripping job.
Yeah,
and that just sends him off on one.
Yeah, but he was a Hell's Angel, but then he was saved by Jesus.
Yes, he can do that.
And so he's off to Sudan to save the children with extreme prejudice. He's he's fired up by the Lord and he's preaching the gospel down the barrel of a gun.
That would work with me.
Yeah, he's like Reverend Rambo, isn't he, in this film?
it's the tattooed style. I mean, he's always. Yeah. I think he's contractually obliged to show his chest at some point. Because he was in 300, wasn't he? Sparta thing. I don't get this guy. Butler. People go mad over him, but he was in that thing with Jennifer Aniston, a rom-com, and that P.S. I Love You with Hilary Swank, which frankly should just disbar you from working anywhere again.
Yeah, he's quite good in Coriolanus, which is
I haven't seen
coming
that one
up
yet.
Soon. He's not bad in that.
Oh, that's good.
He's bad in this.
He's taken a whole lot of bad and stuck it into Machine Gun Preacher, saving the good for Coriolanus. Why is he so bad? I couldn't work it out, but as soon as he came on screen, which is in fact the first shot of the film, I was like, oh.
Yeah, well, it's the danger of the beefcake, isn't it?
Yeah.
That he's a lunk, which, you know, might excite some people, but to spend
ladies rather more than yourself. Possibly. I expect your taste in men is somewhat.
And also,
more
he's such a noisy beefcake,
isn't he?
You
shouting.
Know, I quite like the beefcakes that just sit quietly in the corner, but he does shout an awful lot.
Well, I mean, everything he says is shouting.
Yeah, and maybe that is what happens when you're a beefcake fired up by the Lord. Mm. You've got a lot to say.
He shouted in 300 as well. He did nothing but shout.
I know.
I did any stealthy ink stealthing up on the Trojans.
It's the fatal combination of beefcake and heavy artillery that they have to be shout to be heard over it.
Yeah.
And this, there's a lot of that. And there's a little bit of kind of hugging African children every now and then.
Yeah. It's based on a true life story. And it seems to me that, like many films based on true life stories, it's utterly unbelievable.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know quite why that is.
I don't know. You know, fact is stranger than fiction, I guess. And that works when you read about it in a newspaper. But when you actually see it on the screen, you think, Jesus, this never
happened. Because it happens so quickly. It's like, there I am taking heroin with Michael Shannon and you know, shooting people up to get that my heroin fix.
Yeah, and then you're shooting people up in Africa.
Yeah, and in between I'm listening to some preacher and going, you know, this God thing might be for me after all.
He wants to build an orphanage, doesn't he?
Yeah.
There's weirdly, nestled in the wings of this film, there's some sort of interesting stuff about, I guess, the inherent violence of the religious crusade, the impact of sort of white Western, you know, interference.
Yeah, I suppose in microcosm Africa, there's an aid issue going on.
Yeah, there's
on
an aid issue. But really, it's basically about him shouting and shooting.
Directed oddly. Well, not, it's directed rather boringly, in fact, but directed strangely.
Yeah, directed oddly would be more interesting.
Yes, exactly. By Mark Foster.
Yeah.
The Swiss-born filmmaker who began with Monsters Ball, and the last film I remember him making was the Bond film, Quantum of Solace, which upset the fans, but actually did very well at the box office.
It did, yeah, it did very well. And that was a good action movie. Almost nothing but action.
It was spare and sparse.
And he also did Finding Neverland, which was a very weird change of pace.
Yeah. A film I never liked, but felt very bad about not liking because it had that nice boy in it.
I didn't mind it. You know, Johnny Depp as Jane Barry is a bit of a stretch. Kate Winslet dying
endlessly
of cancer.
He's Hunter S. Thompson, not Jane Barry. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, that would have been interesting as well, wouldn't it? So he's a, let's say, an eclectic director, isn't he? And off the back of the Bond film, I'm surprised that he would gravitate to this, which is basically a kind of clunky B-movie. You could imagine Chuck Norris making this.
Yeah, absolutely. 80s. Well, it's called Machine Gun Preacher, so you expect him to come through the door with a white collar on and a kind of, you know, that cross of bullets that people are like, which is sort of a bit of a strippogram kind of look going on.
Beating people to death with his Bible.
Yeah, exactly. Better title, I think, than the... they keep telling it because they said, oh, come see this. It's not like Hobo with a Shotgun anything like that. And I was like, well, actually it is, but it just hasn't got the jokes. Machine Gun Preacher. We move on now to a completely different lo-fi indie British film shot in the East End of London. It stars Eddie Marsden as a veteran of the Northern Ireland Troubles.
I was sniffing glue when I was 8. I was smoking bud when I was 9. I don't do crack, and mate, I don't do coke. But thanks anyway.
Where's that accent from?
Nottingham.
You're a runaway.
That's for a drink, isn't it? Not a conversation. Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't slept for days. I saw him in my fucking sleeping bag.
Do you want to rest at my place? Just for a few hours.
In return for what?
In return for nothing.
Many people in this film junk heart Zan.
Yes, this is a first for us. We've got a bit of a poacher term gamekeeper situation here.
Should I declare
we?
An interest?
I think you should.
Yeah,
right,
well,
here
I think
and
I
now.
Had last week because we had its premiere at the London Film Festival, and I was there because A, I was covering it for Us Film Weekly. But I'm also in the film, a starring role. Did
is
you
that
spot
a
me?
Kind of conflict?
Well, yeah, but I'm rubbish. The film's quite good, so I declare that.
To be fair, you weren't given much of a chance to be either rubbish or an Oscar winner. In that, I could catch you in the background as a sort of suave barman.
I'm glad you got the suave.
Yeah,
that
the
was
suave
part
came across
shtick.
Loud and clear, like Gerald Butler was shouting suave at me.
I was sweeping the top of the bar suavely.
Yeah, naked.
He was it was talked about. I was Brazilian personally, and I was here.
Yeah.
Trying to sort of get married to an English woman.
Right,
so
that was your motivation.
That was what was all behind every move that I made.
Yeah, there was a sort of tragic air to you.
Yeah, I think that Romola Garai completely pulled focus. She's not. She's just don't work with her.
No, well, I keep turning them down. They offered it me first, and then Derek Malcolm.
Did they offer you both of you the role in that Ben lovely Ben Whishaw took in The Hour, and you had to turn that down?
Yeah, I had to turn it down. But you know, that's why I'm here.
Yeah, it's true. There. And not there.
But should we look at other things about this film?
Yes, there is apart from
your 10 seconds.
Yes,
It's got Eddie Marsden as Frank, who's the ex-soldier, and it's kind of sort of almost the role Bob Hoskins had in Mona Lisa, isn't
yes,
it?
It's
the sort of quiet, crumpled man who could well erupt at any second. You've got Romola Garry, as you say, as this sort of anguished, feckless, white-collar mum on the verge of a nervous breakdown. And then you've got Candice Reed as the homeless teen that Eddie Marsden takes into his home,
so
with terrible consequences.
Split storyline things slightly going on, you know,
yeah, you
multi-stranded,
have.
How do they all match up through society?
And actually, thinking about it now, I think that you could have taken the Candice Reed role.
Do you think?
You'd have brought a kind of poignancy.
I'd have brought
it.
A lot more kind of shuffling as a homeless person.
Yeah, and some more cocktails.
Yeah, exactly. I thought she won the Best Newcomer at the London Film Festival just last week, and which
and
I was
that
really
could
pleased
have been
about.
You.
Could have been me. Could have been, she dropped her award. I would not have done that because they're very heavy. I think she's
very
really strong
in it.
Yeah, I mean, she's not even like sure she's going to do any acting anymore or whatever.
Right.
The award, she said to me, she said, "I'm going to do it now." People obviously like me. She couldn't really believe that anyone would even watch her. But I thought she was very
the acting by and large is very good. Eddie Marsden's sort of reliably strong presence.
Yeah.
Romola Garry too. I thought that there was a slight problem with the script. I thought the script was a little bit wobbly at times. The two stories don't quite kind of coexist
well. Yeah,
because
you're waiting for this kind of thickness.
Yeah, you're waiting for the kind of the link. The dialogue was sometimes a little bit half-baked, but I think that around the halfway mark, it does tighten. I think that we probably do need more films like this, and it's not an easy sell, even with yourself in it. But I think it's still worth checking out.
Absolutely, there's still an originality in it. It's not poverty porn or anything like that at all. I think
no, it's a thriller, really.
Yeah, exactly. So it comes together, and I did think the performances were better than me. That's Junk Art. Zatan, thank you very much for joining us yet again. We're going to talk to the director of Weekend.
I mean, you know, Weekend possibly is the standout film of the week. It's one of those films that's got a lot of buzz building about it, and it's a small film, so I worry that almost too much attention on it is going to harm it.
Yes, that is something I experienced myself, you know, not with my role in Junk Hearts, but watching Weekend, I'd heard so much about it, and it was at the festival, so the spotlight is really on it.
Yeah.
And you say, wow. But it's a precious little thing.
It is a precious little thing, and it's something that needs to be kind of discovered and sort of stumbled upon.
Thanks, as ever, to Zan Brooks there for a comprehensive array of reviews for all of this week's releases. There are so many, we can't possibly fit them in on this show. Go to the best film site on the web, guardian.co.uk/film. One of the delights of the recent London Film Festival was a very small-scale British indie film titled Weekend by English filmmaker Andrew Haig. It's already received gushing reviews from critics in the United States, who seem to have fallen in love with this story of an intense and all-too-brief encounter over one weekend between two young men, Russell, played by Tom Cullen, and Glenn, played by Chris New.
There wasn't any straight boy goes gay for pay websites or stick a monster cock up your arse and ear.com. But my mum had this VHS and A Room with a View. You think it?
Yeah. I think I have. Is that the one with all the poshies in all the houses?
Yeah. Well, they got that, but also they got this scene where all the boys go running naked round the lake.
Oh, I see.
And I'd frozen the video just on the moment when you could see Rupert Gray's cock, and you know it's like when you pull this video, it's shuddering.
So to tell me more about this three-day romance, I'm joined in the studio by director Andrew Haig. Welcome to Film Weekly, Andrew.
It's very good to be here.
Now, you've hot-footed it, or hot-trained it, from Nottingham.
I have indeed.
And that is where your film Weekend is set, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
Is it supposed to be set there, or have I just intuited that?
It's kind of like it's supposed to be in a kind of standard provincial English town, I think. So it's not supposed to be London, and it's not supposed to be Manchester. So
yeah,
it's any other
initially
kind of
I thought
town.
It was Manchester because it was clearly north, and I thought, what else is there up north?
There's
Manchester?
No other city but Manchester.
But I think I was thinking of a city that had a vibrant gay community, if you like, which this one this one clearly does, because we're kind of, you know, put into that world. But I suppose in London and Manchester, they're kind of part of the mainstream, and your characters aren't part of the mainstream and seem painfully aware of that.
Definitely. I think in those cities, the kind of gay community is obviously a lot smaller. And I think it's interesting to me, because sometimes people seem to think that gay people only live in London and they work in bars and that's about it, or the media or something like that, and that's it. But for me, it's like, obviously gay people live in all kinds of cities and find a place within that city, and they do different jobs, and so it was important to me that kind of was somewhere a bit different.
I mean, it's interesting that the reviews from America, as I mentioned before, are just ecstatic in a way.
It's crazy,
brilliant for the film. And I was like, oh my God, this is, I mean, really extraordinary. Do you know why they've gone so mental for it?
Do you know, I don't know, because we didn't expect it, and it's very nice, but because I was in New York when they all came out, so I was like sitting in a cafe reading the New York Times. I'm like, what the fuck? And this is some, like, film? So it's like amazing. Mm. But
I mean, it is a lovely yeah. film. I don't want to sort of denigrate it, but yeah. I mean, it's like, you go like Metacritic and all that. It's like 91%.
I know.
What are you, Scorsese?
It's crazy. I think it's because there hasn't been a film perhaps like this for quite a long time. So I think there's been a gap for this kind of thing.
Well, I couldn't really remember ever. Because it is, in a way, it's a sort of classic rom-com template. I mean, yeah. It's my favourite kind of films, where people meet and just wander around a city, you know, falling in love and chatting a bit.
Yeah.
You go a bit further than that in kind of, you go back to their flat and they take drugs and have sex and all of that, which you don't get that in Annie Hall. Actually, you do get that in Annie Hall.
You do get in Annie Hall,
doesn't quite
yeah.
get it down, does
yeah.
he?
You don't get that in Before Sunrise.
No, you
sure.
don't. I mean, were those films the template rather than, I mean, clearly Four Weddings was the template, although that would have improved it a lot.
I mean, not necessarily the template, but obviously you can't make a film like this without thinking about those films. And I like those films, but to me, most people don't wander around Vienna having these conversations. It's like they're in, you know, normal cities and normal towns. And I think also what's interesting for me is that because they're gay characters, more of it has to happen indoors. I think both the characters feel more comfortable having those conversations in the privacy of their home rather than walking down the street holding hands talking about love.
Yes, because you have those classic rom-com moments from In Search of a Midnight Kiss, but they even talk about how uncomfortable they feel holding hands in public and having a kiss in public. And
exactly.
At a certain point they do, and it is, you know, they get a bit of ribbing for it.
Yeah.
How much of this is kind of personal experience that you've always wanted to put in film, because maybe you've always thought, well, that's not my life that I'm seeing reflected by normal straight cinema.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's certainly the kind of things that the characters are dealing with and the things they talk about and things they think about, and that kind of sense of just not fitting in within kind of society, mainstream society, and even in gay society as well. I think for me it was important to say that these people don't quite fit in anywhere, you know, so that certainly comes from kind of personal experience.
And there's an interesting sort of insight into the layers of politics within the gay community itself. I mean, Russell is a bit new to this and Glenn is a bit more experienced and kind of, you know, political and out about it.
Yeah.
And that's where the pull is.
Yeah, and he's political to it, to the extent that it kind of stops him being happy, I think, sometimes.
Yeah,
he's
but kind you're very of used close to him, it. Aren't you?
He's a nice. Yeah. You mean the character?
Yes, the character. You seem to be
kind of. I don't know. It's weird. I think I'm probably somewhere in between the two. I think sometimes if I'm pissed off, I'm a bit more like Glenn.
Yeah.
And if I'm not, I'm a bit more like Russell. And I think that's probably quite a common thing, regardless of your sexuality. It's like sometimes you're more engaged with who you are and how you define yourself, and then sometimes you just want to fit in and have a nice time and watch telly.
So you've got this kind of familiar template, if you like.
Yeah.
But giving it the gay, not subtext even, the gay main narrative, the two men talk about stuff that you would never get in a heterosexual rom-com. I mean, they talk about sex, like properly
Definitely.
Referring to the organs and the act and how it's done and how important it is. Well, I've never seen that in a real straight film. Well, yes, they're falling in love and kissing, but they don't talk about, you know, cock and bum.
No, maybe they should do.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Yeah. Are you freer to do that? And in the sense,
possibly
challenging audiences a little bit.
Definitely, and especially in the early stages of the film, I wanted to challenge people's expectations of what the film would be and make them feel a little bit like, oh God, I'm not sure I want to listen to this. Mm. And that was very much part of the plan, to almost just from the outset say, this is what this is, you either like it or you don't like it.
And because he's quite political, Glenn, I sort of felt, well, yes, I'm feeling stuff here, and maybe, you know, maybe I should start coming out, you know. For a straight guy, I'm quite gay, so, you know.
You are quite gay for a straight guy.
Thanks very much, yes. I take that as a compliment from you. And so I was like, oh my God, you know, maybe I'm feeling uncomfortable here because I'm getting pushed, and actually maybe I am gay. Maybe this is my time here live on Film Weekly.
You do get quite a lot of straight people feeling like they feel a bit uncomfortable, and then they realise that they really enjoy it and get different things from it than they thought they would, and you know that's. But I, you know, I didn't want it to be easy for people or for a gay audience actually, because it's not traditional like a gay film.
Well, that's why I thought that political pull in there. Some gay people watching it going, well, maybe I should be a bit more out or less out.
Yeah, exactly, and also not just even about kind of gay issues, just about in terms of being authentic to whatever you want to do in your life. Mm. It's because what I wanted to deal with, and it's funny for me because I don't really see it as a romantic drama. I mean, I see that it is. But to me, it's kind of not, in a weird sense.
Well, it's about commitment, really, to a belief, to a lifestyle, exactly. to a dream.
That's exactly what it is. It's just
I'm glad we've
finding something.
Around after your 90th interview. Yes.
That's what it is. It is about commitment.
And Weekend is on general release this weekend, starting Friday, the 4th of November. Thanks to Andrew Haig. For more information on that film, just go to the Weekend website, weekend-film.com. And that brings us to our end for this week. The music featured in the show has been from the superb soundtrack to Jack Goes Boating, Philip Seymour Hoffman directing himself in a lovely New York indie film featuring Fleet Foxes, Mel Torme, Cat Power, Mozart, Bill Evans, just to name a few. Beautiful music to go with a really lovely little film. And available from all decent record shops on and off the web. Until next week, from me, Jason Solomons, and Film Weekly producer Jason Phipps, who's playing in the background, enjoy the music and the cinema wherever you are. Goodbye.
Nova is America's most watched science series. You'll find it every night at 7:50 on PBS, Sky Channel 166, Virgin Media 243. PBS, where television matters.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.